This is Wetlands Radio, a series about coastal restoration. Rosina Philippe's home is nestled in the wetlands between Louisiana's Big Toe and Barataria Bay, about 40 miles downriver from New Orleans. The only way to get there is by boat.
This is home, first of all, home to my people. We are the Atakapa Ishak Shuwasha people. We have been here for millennia plus.
In her near seven decades, Rosina's watched the land change and disappear. She says it's because of how most people think about the wetlands.
I think we've turned natural resources into commodities. That's all we see. When we look at the land, many people, they see real estate. For me, I see home and I see habitat. We're losing habitat. That's what it is. It's rookeries, you know, it's nurseries.
What do you think of this term, coastal restoration?
Do something already, something that we know will work.
What would you do, first thing?
Close the canals. Plug them up, fill them up.
The canals. You've likely heard about the canals. Tens of thousands of them, ever widening, shredding through the wetlands. What some scientists say is Louisiana's major cause of land loss.
We have thousands of canals that were dredged for oil and gas industry, for transportation, for locating wellheads and pipes and whatever the uses they were for. But a lot of these canals were supposed to be closed when the activity that they were dredged for ended. Well, some of them were, the majority of them were not.
The vast majority were not. I'm Eve Abrams. This is episode 10, Canal Backfilling.
There's this myth that coastal erosion is the dominant force of land loss in Louisiana, and it's not.
Scott Eustace is the community science director at Healthy Gulf, formerly known as the Gulf Restoration Network, whose mission is to, quote, reverse the long pattern of overexploitation of the Gulf's natural resources.
The magnitudes of losses that we've suffered in the interior marshes, away from the forces of erosion.
Away from the coastline.
Away from the coastline, because of these oil fields, is much larger, twice as much.
The more canals you have, the more land loss you have. The fewer canals, the less land loss. If you have no canals, there's no land loss.
Gene Turner is a coastal ecologist at LSU, and he's single-minded when it comes to the causes of coastal land loss. Also, a bit of an outlier. Most wetland scientists think land loss is due to both canals and levees channelizing the Mississippi, not Gene, who's been studying these canals for the last half century.
I am retired, but I'm not retired.
Which is partly how I convinced him to take me out in a boat. First up, a marsh hydrology lesson.
So I'm gonna get off, and then maybe you could toss the equipment to me.
We're near Lake Salvador and Bayou Signet, not far from Jean Lafitte National Park, about 15 miles southwest of New Orleans as the crow flies.
So we're walking on marsh right now?
Yeah.
I follow this octogenarian through the marsh. Gene has a bushy white mustache that curls around the sides of his mouth, eyebrows to match, and he's wielding a posthole digger, think giant salad tongs, which he promptly plunges deep into the ground. As you can hear, things get wet pretty quick. When marshes are healthy, like this one, Gene refers to them as a green toupee, rising above the mineral matter below. Gene twists through the toupee and eventually pulls out a core of sediment, chock full of roots, leaving a deep hole in the marsh.
We took out a core in several pieces. So what's down there is what?
Water in the bottom of the hole that you dug.
Yeah, so where's that coming from? From the side.
In other words, even though our feet are dry, the land below us is saturated with water, flowing through organic soil, comprised for the most part of roots and rhizomes, horizontal plant structures, anchoring plants underground.
water is filtering through the marsh below ground all the time. It's percolating in the soil below ground. You can see it's already starting to fill up. This is not a cement wall. It's a living system. And if you change that below ground flow with a spoil bank, you're changing how the system behaves.
Spoil banks are what you get when you scoop out marsh to make canals. The first material scooped is the marsh surface, and it's not that heavy. As you dig deeper, you scoop heavier material.
The last at the end is this very heavy mineral matter, and that's put on the top, and that presses down on the marsh. So over time, the spoil bank sinks a little bit, So water that normally would go below ground sideways can't do that, and that could be half the water flow in a marsh.
So that water I just saw seep into the hole Gene dug with his post hole digger, that probably wouldn't happen in a marsh which had been cut up by canals and weighed down by all that heavy material.
And then above ground, it has this spoil bank in the way, 3 to 15 feet high.
Kind of like a levee.
And that means water is blocked completely to go side to side.
We have a very gentle tide in the Gulf of Mexico. It's a very soothing massage of water over these marsh grasses. And so when you create a spoil bank that's 3 feet tall, you end up creating impoundments that prevent that massage of water from going over the marshes, and the marshes drown.
Meaning die, subside into open water. Which is why so many people, like Rosina Philippe, want to close the canals, starting with backfilling them. Every scientific paper of Gene Turner's on this topic, going back decades, concludes canals are the problem and backfilling the solution. Now, there isn't enough material in spoil banks to fill the canals completely because, again, the marsh is organic. Roots and rhizomes, not rocks or minerals. And just like the vegetable scraps you throw into compost, once you dig this organic material up and pile it somewhere else, it shrinks. But backfilling helps narrow the canals. And if canal water is free-flowing, new vegetation takes hold, and the canals continue to narrow over time. Gene's research consistently finds backfilling repairs marsh, which means rebuilds land. And yet, less than 1%, in fact, something like 1/100 of 1%.
It's minuscule.
Of all the canals.
It's a piece of salt on a piece of meat.
Have been backfilled.
The history of canal backfilling is we don't have a history of canal backfilling.
Mark Davis directs Tulane's Institute on Water Resources Law and Policy. Mark says, for starters, the problem with backfilling canals is each canal has its own permit. And remember, there are tens of thousands of them.
Many of the permits do have a provision that when the activity ceases, that you will restore.
But permit holders claim activity hasn't ceased.
When you stop using a canal for one purpose, you may say, well, I'm just waiting for the price of oil or gas to change, then I'll go back. So you've not abandoned the canal. It's a dormant canal.
But come on, says environmental scientist Scott Eustace. Look at the last half century of oil drilling in the wetlands.
We're not seeing boom and bust and boom and bust. We're just seeing boom and bust, 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 bust. If a well has been shut in for 11 years, realistically, they're not coming back. They should be made to go in, plug it with cement, remove the steel, and then the law says they need to backfill the canal in 90 days.
And so why don't companies plug them?
Because we don't make them.
Unless it's in your permit condition, or if it's not in your contract, there is no implied responsibility to backfill anything. And so the reason we haven't done more with canals is because nobody's made anybody do it. And even where you have obligations, it normally requires litigation to prove that obligation, and then someone has to enforce it.
Another reason backfilling is so tricky is most of Louisiana's coast is privately owned by landholding companies. The single largest landowner is oil and gas giant ConocoPhillips. But Jean Lafitte National Park's Barataria Preserve has a few canals, ones they've backfilled. Gene Turner, of bushy eyebrows and mustache fame, has been monitoring their progress for decades. This is what I wanted him to show me.
So they took down the spoil bank right up 100 feet ahead.
We pass great egrets and great blue herons and motor into a canal.
So this was, imagine this being 70 or 90 feet wide.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
It's like maybe 20 at most.
Right. Isn't that great?
And when was this filled?
2011.
So that's not even 15 years.
Right.
Gene says canals that have been properly backfilled have an 85% recovery.
I mean, people need to get it in their heads that this is working. So this is what we have, and this is something that is low cost and quick that can be done all across the coast. We can deal directly with the problem. So why shouldn't we be directly involved with a solution?
Next on Wetlands Radio, hope.
There has to be an act of hope, and I think it's an action. It's a way of doing things, it's a way of thinking of things, and Glass Half Full just wants to play our part, and I think we're going to need a lot of different people to play their part.
That's next time on Wetlands Radio. Wetlands Radio was reported and produced by me, Eve Abrams. Editing help from Rosemary Westwood, Rachel Berg, Anne Gislason, Marie Lovejoy, Garrett Hazelwood, Melody Chang, and Lane Kaplan-Levinson. Original music was written and performed by Greg Schatz. Mastering by Evan Satanovich. Thanks to our partners, BitNEP, the Barataria Terrebonne National Estuary Program, and WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. Funding was provided by BitNEP through the Environmental Protection Agency's National Estuary Program. To hear all 12 episodes in Wetlands Radio, head to wwno.org or bitnep.org. That's btnep.org. Thanks for listening.